So I just wanted to introduce just another wee bit of thinking, exploring for yourselves in your own minds. And we're sort of coming back to Sankara. And for some of you, you know there's a kind of a Buddhist thing of the 12 links of dependent, codependent arising, yes? So this happens, then that happens, then that happens, then that happens, then. But in fact, they're all kind of firing away quite a lot at the same time. But it's said that sankhara or predispositions or volitional intentions, whatever we like to name them, is the second of the links of that wheel. And that what comes before it is ignorance. And ignorance is a difficult word for us Westerners because it's quite it's quite often used as a derogatory term. Yes, if you take it literally, to ignore what there is, it sort of slants it slightly differently. Well, I like it better. And to ignore or not to know, for me, has a quite a an invitational effect, yeah, that there's that out of not knowing how things are or whatever, however I try and describe it, if I don't catch that, then out of that arises volitional intention, that or predisposition, yes, and then it quickly moves into blah, 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 blah. And it's hard to break the wheel of arising. And it's said that there's a couple of places to break it. And the one that I think is kind of accessible to most people is we can break the chain at feeling. There's one of the links that's feeling, which is push and pull. Yeah, it's Vedana. And so we can kind of interrupt that by being with the movement towards or away from something and practicing kind of not doing either, so that whatever needs to be seen or known gets its time to show up. And it's quite often not straightforward. It takes a wee bit of patience. And it's said that, the three things that go along with, well, two things that go along with ignorance are greed and hate. You know this, don't you? You've read the books, you've done your tick boxes. I really trust that when folk have, when I have an experience of ignoring or greed or hate, that there's something in it, that it's why have I ignored? Why am I responding with greed, wanting? Why am I responding with aversion, with hate? As opposed to those are bad things and they should get removed. We should just work towards those things not arising, as opposed to them saying, why? How? What is this? What is it in which these qualities arise in me? And I don't have the answers, but I feel that it's quite a useful inquiry with ignorance. What is it that I'm not seeing, I'm not knowing? Yeah. And it doesn't come through cognitive endeavor mostly. It comes from, again, that deep listening, that listening with the whole body mind and not just with the head. So it's not something to be figured out. Yeah. There's something we just haven't got because of whatever about the situation. So that sort of patient pausing, it's like, what is this? What is this? So the not knowing is kind of, it bypasses something. And quite often I've found if I, in myself and working with others, that it sometimes leads to quite an existential place. What is it that's unbearable? what is it that it's hard to know? What is it that it's hard to be with or meet in myself in this situation? And so it's like a doorway, you know. If I rush past that, I don't have a chance of being with, or what is it that makes out of that makes me makes greed, wanting, craving arise? Yes, because that wanting, craving, wanting or craving, need, greed, sometimes is just based on our. It's never just personality, but sometimes it's a top layer thing. Yes, I need more coffee. You know, I need more sleep. You know, I need more love. I need more whatever it is. Time with people. I need more space. That's mine. You know, and there's something in my needing more space that doesn't allow me to actually know that the space is there for the taking, you know. My suggestion is that there are other kinds of need that in my way of seeing things are okay. And it's not as if we get them, and it's not that we have to necessarily do anything, but it's much more in line with, I can't remember, deserve, that the discussion in the morning around about deserve, yes? That there's some basic needs of the heart, of the human beingness in us. That if we were able to sort of not judge ourselves because of those qualities of greediness, maybe there's something that's not satiated. And maybe it's not acquiring things that will satiate that, so that the greed. I remember walking out of after a group, it was years ago, and I find myself in my kitchen, walking around. I looked in the fridge, I looked in the shelf of my, you know, as we sort of vegetarian vegans have jars of dried assortments of things. I looked in the food cupboard, I looked in the bread bin, I looked at my jars of jams and Marmite and stuff like that. And I don't know who stood behind me, it was one of the group that said, "I've got a feeling you're not going to find what you need there." Thank you, yeah. But so true, you know. I was looking to satiate something. You know what I mean, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to find the thing that was going to hit the spot. And I think that if we maybe desist a little bit from feeding the superficial bits, don't always do that, then maybe there is an opportunity to be with a deeper kind of need, which may be, as I've said, the basic needs of being a human being. But maybe I'll put into that the sort of the greed or the need or the longing, the spiritual longing to be true, to know one's tathata, to know one's essence, to know what this is about. And that kind of greed can take us, shape us and take us in ways that the other kind of greed does not. You know, the other kind of greed takes us away from that, the pain of disconnection, possibly for something, whatever we call it, spiritual. You've got your own words for it. Yes, I don't even have a word for it, but I know what it feels like. And then if we look at hatred, and gosh, isn't that a bad one to be stuck with? A really strong aversion, really strong aversion. And I'm not suggesting that we should act aversively or with hatred, but maybe it's speaking of another truth. Maybe it's speaking of, well, what is it that activates that? It's, you know, it's a reaction, it's a response, it's a defense mechanism. But it's also said to be connected to greed and ignorance. What activates that could be quite simply, you know, a very sort of primitive, I didn't get what I want, or someone's going to hurt me, I'm angry, or, you know, oh, that's there too. But maybe if we dip a bit deeper about what would justify that kind of hatred and anger, might be something more to do with the depth of meaning and what's important for us in terms of the spiritual journey. What's been insulted, what's been attacked, what's been, I can't even find the words, but that in us, and of course, cliche term is righteous indignation, which is kind of the acceptable word for hatred when it's to do with a good cause. But there is something in us that it's almost as if it's like the warrior arises and it turns into, it metamorphoses into something like hatred, which isn't very pleasant, as opposed to just that energy that, you know, not here. You know, for me, the energy of hatred, if I fix it onto the object, becomes, yeah, that's not what it's usually about. But if I feel the energy of this sense of, no, that has no right in this place, that's no right in this place, whatever that might be inside oneself, it gives it, you know, it's almost like we have to plumb these things. And if we just feel that these are negative qualities of human beingness, I think we've lost a huge amount of potential, you know. And so the invitation is to, you know, when you're feeling any and all of this, it's something that's knocking on you to pay attention. It's not something to get rid of. And I think sometimes within spiritual teachings from many traditions, you know, the path of purification. Some of these absolute human central experiences are just not valued. And so I'm just opening up a little bit to that. Obviously, if we act on hatred, if we act externally with greed, if we bumble through life in ignorance and then don't take responsibility for our actions, that's a whole other different story. But there's so many layers of this. It's like you could never be bored if you really wanted to just, you know, what is this? What is this? What is this? What is this? You know, oh my goodness, you know, it can keep going for ages and ages and ages. And probably you wouldn't get an answer. But the inquiry in of itself dispels ignorance, dispels hatred as a form, dispels greed and opens up to the potential treasures of what's within those end results, if you like. So they're both causes and effects, like most things are when we have a look at it. We okay with that as a kind of a notion? And it takes the kind of, you know, there's some things that it's all right to feel and be, and there's some things that it's not all right to feel and be. How on earth do we ever expect to be free if we're just imprisoning aspects of our human beingness that aren't worthy? You know, I don't know how much I'd have to work with if I did that. You know, if I put everything that wasn't worthy in jail, there'd be not much left to work with. So, you know, the purification is through the distillation, and it's not through the getting rid of. And sometimes I feel that sometimes some of the more positive practices that we do in Buddhism, if they are used to, in some ways, get rid of these things, so they're aversive. The what's behind them is getting rid of, annihilating, whatever. And even if it's a metta practice, and you know, metta practice is in a form we're going to do in a wee while, I hope. If it's to get rid of something, it's not a metta practice. It's a distortion. And so even the best of the practices that I've had the good fortune to learn, to be honest, I've just used them unskillfully. It's like at the heart of the question is, there is more. There's more to be known. There's more to be listened to. And it's, you know, how we progress, how I progress, is by realizing that the only way I'm going to deepen into this inquiry is through listening. It's a deeply receptive process. It's quite humbling that you have to, you know, it's like waiting with something until something may arise, and sometimes it doesn't. There was a lovely, one of my friends sent me a poem, and one of the lines which just is still with me is the sacrament of waiting. The sacrament of waiting. Most of us, when we have to wait for anything, feel it's a waste of time. You could be doing something else, or you're multitasking and waiting. And there's something about the sacrament of waiting, which gives for me a sense of meaning and dignity and purpose, that what may reveal may take another 10 years. From that 10 minutes of just waiting, it might take another 10 years before something shows up. It doesn't always come immediately, and quite often these practices, they don't always render something up or show something up immediately. So a lot of trust is involved, and a lot of forgiveness of oneself, or if that's and also I absolutely trust the contemplative practice, that if we just pay attention in that kind of listening way, that receptive way, the deep listening, eventually everything that we need to know will reveal. I trust that, and all of the other pieces of the practice are helpful at sometimes. I need an adjustment, yes. The screws come loose and I need a little adjustment. But I, I've been leading and a psychotherapy training for over 40 years. And so it's, there's a lot of teaching of this and that, and right and left and up and down, and what territory, and da-da-da-da-da, and shock and trauma, and dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. And it's almost like we can forget the centrality of the power of awareness itself, and think we need to know more technique or more understanding or more this or more that, which can help. I'm not saying it doesn't. But when we shift from getting the tools, and that's the answer. So in Buddhism, understanding the teachings, the tools. We've moved somewhere away from the depth of the practice and the depth of human, within all of us, I believe this to be true. I can believe it to be true more in you than in me, as from this morning's discussion. But the power of the awakening in all of us, I trust that. I trust that something will shine through. I do trust that something will shine through, but it may take a long time. So in order to distill meaning, whether it's within volitional activities, predispositions, it does invite an awful lot of the sacrament of waiting. And that's not waiting whilst thinking about your Christmas present list. You know, it's not that kind of waiting. It's really bearing witness to whatever randomly you think shows up. And being alongside yourself with that, trusting that whatever, however modest my practice, the next thing that I need to know will show up. So whether you believe that or not, I, over the years of getting it all more complicated, I come back to trusting the process of relational mindfulness and awareness. So what helps in some of that, and for many of you who have been brave enough to come back to these sessions with me, this will be familiar. But what helps is a field of benevolent attention, benevolent, kind attention. Whether I can activate that or touch into that in myself, which is probably the hardest. You know, how do I pay attention? If I pay attention with some benevolent attention, interested, curious attention, and allow myself to be impacted by my experience, alongside my experience. And it seems to be, like all things, easier to offer that to another than it is to oneself. So simply to be with another, and I think it was mentioned, it was shared this morning, to be with another with that intention, which is not to judge, to trust that you don't have to do anything, that what needs to come up will come up, with the intention of, very close to metta, may all beings be well, including myself, including the other. And just, you know, bear with the other. One of the definitions of compassion that sometimes, you know, there's a lot of different ways of looking at what compassion is, but it's sometimes it's just to bear witness. You know, it's not to get too complicated. It's just not to abandon the other and not to abandon oneself in those places of difficulty.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.